Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 8, the character of Bharat Maharaj, text number 22. We'll begin with 22. It's not particularly large purports. We're continuing to hear about Jad Bharat, actually Bharat Maharaj, not Jad Bharat, but Bharat Maharaj, and his love affair with a deer. When I placed all the sacrificial ingredients on the kusha grass, the deer, when playing, would touch the grass with its teeth and thus pollute it. When I chastised the deer by pushing it away, it would immediately become fearful and sit down motionless, exactly like the son of a saintly person. Thus it would stop its play. Purport. Bharat Maharaj was constantly thinking of the activities of the deer, forgetting that such meditation and diversion of attention was killing his progress in spiritual advancement. Translation. After speaking like a madman in this way, Maharaj Bharat got up and went outside. Seeing the footprints of the deer on the ground, he praised the footprints out of love, saying, "Oh, unfortunate Bharat, your austerities and penances are very insignificant compared to the penance and austerity undergone by this earth planet. Due to the earth's severe penances, the footprints of this deer, which is small, beautiful, most auspicious and soft, are imprinted on the surface of this fortunate planet. This series of footprints show a person like me who am bereft due to loss of the deer, how the animals pass through the forest, and how can I regain my lost wealth. By these footprints, this land has become a proper place for brahmanas who desire heavenly planets or liberation to execute sacrifices to the demigods." Purport. Is said that when a person becomes overly involved in loving affairs, he forgets himself as well as others, and he forgets how to act and how to speak. It is said that once, when a man's son was blind since birth, the father, out of staunch affection for the child, named him Padmalochana, or lotus-eyed. This is a situation arising from blind love. Bharat Maharaj gradually fell into this condition due to his material love for the deer. It is said in the Smriti Shastra, "Yasmin deshe mriga krishnas, tasmin dharman nivodata." The tract of land where the footprints of a deer, black deer, can be seen is to be understood a suitable place to execute religious rituals. Maharaj Bharat continued to speak like a madman. Seeing above his head the dark marks on the rising moon, which resembled the deer, he said, "Can it be that the moon, who is so kind to an unhappy man, might also be kind upon my deer, knowing that it has strayed from home and has become motherless? This moon has given the deer shelter near itself, just to protect it from the fearful attacks of a lion." After perceiving the moonshine, Maharaj Bharat continued to speak like a mad, crazy person. He said, "The deer's son was so submissive and dear to me that due to its separation, I am feeling separation from my own son. Due to the burning fever of this separation, I am suffering as if inflamed by a forest fire. My heart, which is like a lily of the land, is now burning. See me so distressed. The moon is certainly splashing its shining nectar upon me, just as a friend throws water on another friend who has a high fever. In this way, the moon is bringing me happiness." Purport. According to Ayurvedic treatment, it is said that if one has a high fever, someone should splash him with water after gargling this water. This way, the fever subsides. Although Bharat Maharaj was very aggrieved due to the separation of his so-called son, the deer he thought was the moon, the deer He thought that the moon was splashing gargled water on him from its mouth, and that this water was to subdue his high fever, which was raising due to separation from the deer. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Puristaya Bhutai, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane, Namaste Sarasatundeve, Gauravani Pracharane, Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatyade Sitarane. Quite an amazing story. I mean, generally when we fall into Maya, most people don't fall into that much Maya, especially devotees. But we can see from our own experience that sometimes when devotees fall into Maya, Maya gives them a special amount of illusion to help them forget Krishna completely. That's generally when one makes a conscious effort to become bewildered. Because otherwise, unless one became absorbed in intoxication, illicit sex, and generally not meat eating, that's pretty rare, but at least intoxication, illicit sex, then it would be practically impossible to forget Krishna. One has to take shelter in order to be in Maya after being a devotee for some time. One has to take shelter, a good amount of illusory activities. Of course, those who are civilized are not generally just born into a civilized position. One achieves that civilization after following the Varna and Ashram system. In other words, when one generally achieves the human form of life, he takes birth in a in a rather uncultured state of society. And if he follows the position of a Shudra, and we can see in society most people, well, nowadays everyone is, it's hard to find a Shudra because people have become less than animals. As I've said before, Subhaktivinoda Thakur has said that by birth everyone is a Shudra, and by modern education one becomes less than an animal. Because Shudras, they recognize who's on a higher level of consciousness than they are. They have some idea that the purpose of life is to get free from the bodily concept of life. At least they've heard about that, even if they don't understand it very clearly, but they know that they're supposed to take shelter of people who have a higher state of consciousness than they do, if only to achieve the necessities of life. Nowadays, people are so bewildered, they don't understand how the material nature works. They think that it's going on by accident. That's been our training. And there's so much nonsense in the name of knowledge. People spend billions of dollars on telescopes and microscopes and this activity, that activity. But for all we know, all of it is just a completely waste of time. They have really no idea, with all this money that they spent, like, for instance, going to the moon planet. According to our Vedic knowledge, the moon is inhabited by a highly advanced intellectual class of people. But they say it's made out of dust. And they spend trillions of dollars to discover that it's made out of dust. But I think most of the devotees, and even most of the people in this world nowadays, realize it was just a hoax. They didn't go to the moon. No one knows what they went to. All we know is that they wasted a lot of money, as Prabhupada said repeatedly. They're just wasting money. And where that money went, no one really knows, most of it. And therefore, we can see what massive hoaxes they can perpetuate. But people don't know that. Nitevidu swarta kitim vishnu Darashaya Bahir Artamanina Andaya Tandira Pagyamanas Te Pichatantra Urudami Bhara. That people don't know that the goal of life is to obtain Krishna. If they know that the goal of life is to obtain Krishna, then one can actually begin to see things properly. One can actually see that the so-called romance that's going on in the material world, when you strip it away, is not very romantic. Basically speaking, everyone wants to survive. And we think survival means that my body will survive. So therefore it's called karshati. It's a hard struggle to maintain the body. Just to get off of our bed every morning requires a tremendous amount of willpower. And that's when the struggle just begins. To clothe the body, to feed the body, to make sure the teeth don't rot and fall out. If that's not happening, then we get some headache or eye problem, or you have to go to the eye doctor, the dentist, you have to do your exercises, take your vitamin pills, find out what you're missing. The whole thing is a struggle to keep the body moving, to keep it alive. And ultimately, they're so attached to keeping this body together that even one who's unconscious for years at a time, one is hooked up to a machine, which is breathing for oneself, pumping the blood through the body, all over the idea that if the body doesn't work anymore, then we die. And there's no time in history where that has become more the current or the philosophy about existence. So all this activities of love, romance, and bravery, and nobility, it's all just keep the body alive, to keep it going. As it says, Deha Patya Kalatradishu Atma Sanyesha Satsupi Tesham Pramato Nidanam Pashanapi Napashati. So Deha means the body, and Apatya means the children. Kalatra means the wife, and Adishu means if you have children, you have a wife or husband, and you have, then you're going to have a lot more things than that. Rarely people are going to live outside with their children. They'll need a house. They'll need some food. They'll need clothing. And in modern society, it's become even more complicated. But what is it all about? We're hoping they'll protect us from death. That's all. That by ourselves, we can't manufacture the things necessary to protect ourselves. So we form families, which is the basis of society. Then we form communities. Then we form nations. Of course, even our little experience with nations, this is just our very small amount of time where they've created these nations. Europe was not like it is now. Before, some king would have different areas of Europe, and they didn't necessarily speak the same languages or have the same culture. Like, for instance, in Belgium, they have the Flanders and they have the Walloon. The Walloon is French-speaking, connected with France, and the Walloon and the Flanders is connected with Holland. They speak Flemish or Dutch. So how this became a country called Belgium is a little hard to understand, and it's hard for them to understand it either. Completely different cultures. But at one time, it wasn't Belgium. It was something else. It was some king. He conquered this part of Europe and that part of Europe, and they got it together. And it's considered perfectly natural that all different types of people would live together under some tract of land which was kind of a country. Of course, Europe's history is such that one army would come this way, and then this other army would come this way, and it was a whole, it's the history of one war after another. Poland once was all the way to Russia, all Ukraine, and parts of Russia were part of Poland, and Poland was practically, you know, up to Lithuania and up to Ljubljana. And then at other times, Poland disappeared from the map completely. No one knew where it went. Every little country had its glories at one time. But what is it all about? To survive. Even the kings, these valiant history, the kings. What is the king? The king is simply a big householder. The normal householder nowadays, which is called the nuclear family, because it's just about to explode all the time. That's why I call it nuclear. Before it was a joint family. And when joint families combine together, they call it the person who was heading up that family, that area, was called a king. And there used to be a lot of little kings, and then there were bigger kings over the little kings, etc., etc. But what was the whole idea? Just to survive, to grow food, and have some warriors to protect others from stealing the food. And that was the whole idea. And it was all in order to keep it going. There had to be some kind of illusion. Otherwise it wouldn't work. So that illusion is, of course, the basis of it is sex desire, which produces illusion, which manifests itself in society, friendship, and love. Otherwise, for instance, one has a different perspective when one is not under the particular mode of material nature. If a animal, well, we could say, a man who is infatuated by the mode of passion, he sees a beautiful woman as the object of enjoyment. We call that love. Well, a brahmachari may see the woman as death personified, an actual advanced brahmachari. And a animal may see the woman as a good meal. It's the same woman, but there's a different perspective according to one's consciousness. So under the modes of material nature that one is situated, one will see the whole material world in a certain way. Although it's inconceivable that Bharat Maharaj had fallen in love with a deer, but we have no idea where people's consciousness is nowadays, what they're actually thinking. Externally, people try to dress up in a certain way, and even in public, sometimes they put on a certain type of mannerism. But where their actual consciousness is very difficult to understand. The only surprising thing is, because as I mentioned, is that such an advanced devotee who is practically free from material illusion if some apsara comes to the forest, as we generally see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, some sage is meditating for some time, and then Indra sends an apsara, like to Vishvamrita Muni, and somehow or another he becomes infatuated and falls down. So that seems rather normal, expected. But Indra didn't send the fawn. He didn't send this little deer. And yet, somehow or another, such an advanced devotee became infatuated by moha. And it only started in a very, very small way, that he thought himself to be protector of the deer. That's part of the mentality that the male has, those who take a male form of life, they're given the illusion of being the protector. And part of the mentality the woman gets is that she encourages the man to protect her. I mean, in a normal society, that, please, here I am, I'm your servant, please protect me. One time I was with Prabhupada, actually I got to carry the umbrella above Prabhupada's head. I was distributing books, and Dallas, that's where Prabhupada was being interviewed. And I was all the way in the back because, but then suddenly, although I thought, you know, I'm not going to see Prabhupada because I'm all the way back here distributing books. But then someone came up to me and gave me the umbrella, telling me to come to the front and hold it over Prabhupada. And Prabhupada came to the airport, and I remember I was walking with him. And Prabhupada was, I was 20 years old or something, in my early 20s. And Prabhupada was in his late 70s. And Prabhupada was just gliding along. I was running to keep up with him. Effortlessly, Prabhupada was walking, just gliding, and I was running. And someone, I remember the other devotees were running to keep up with Prabhupada. It's definitely, he was working by the spiritual energy. And then during that conversation, which is recorded on the video, well, the first thing they asked, the reporters asked, which is not on the video, I don't think, they said, Swamiji, how did you come here? So Prabhupada said there are three ways of traveling. One is by yantra. Well, first he said the first way is by mystic power. And the second one is by yantra, by machine. And the third one, he said, is you strap thousands of pigeons together and then they fly into the air and you fly with them. That one we haven't seen so far. We haven't seen the mystic power one either. But. And they asked, so Swamiji, how did you come? And he said, I came by airplane just to be one with you. And then they asked Prabhupada, what do you think of women's liberation? I was with Prabhupada a couple of times or a few times where he was asked that question. And he said that actually women, he was explaining how women are being cheated. That these men, they don't want to take responsibility for the women. So they say, you're liberated. We have sex together. You produce a child. I'm not going to take care of the child because you're liberated. I go away and you're liberated to take care of the child. I remember one time I was there, Prabhupada was asked, so, which, and then Prabhupada said, then now the woman, she has to either kill the child or take welfare from the government. And so Prabhupada asked the reporter, it was a woman reporter, so you think this is good? And she said, well, that's the woman's choice. And then Prabhupada turned to one of his disciples and said, 32 ounces. Either you kill your child or you beg from the government. Not very intelligent. And then this woman reported in Dallas, she was saying that, you know, I probably said, don't you think women are subordinate to men? And she said, I don't think so. That's not my opinion. That's not what we think nowadays. And Prabhupada said, no, they're by nature subordinate. He said, they're saying, here I am, take me, I'm your servant. But in modern society, people don't want to take responsibility, and therefore they've declared themselves, you know, everyone is free to do whatever they want. But this is just another type of illusion. That actually in society, everyone is supposed to cooperate with each other, and it's not supposed to be so complicated. That everyone is actually just trying to survive, and even previously they used to have children, and the children were useful. They'd actually help out with the agriculture, they'd do the chores around the house, they didn't waste people's money. By nowadays you have a child, you gotta buy it video games, you have to buy it all kinds of, you know, not useless food. You have to send it to college to get brainwashed. Cost a fortune. And at the end of the college they can't get a job either. So much unemployment. And so having children has become, you know, a a very expensive hobby. So, of course, people don't want to have children because they're useless. You become old and they send you to some kind of old age home. Get rid of you. They don't want to see you. And maybe once every other Christmas they come and visit you. Drop off, I hope you're all right card, and then leave. So material society, when you actually look at it objectively, is actually not so romantic. It's actually quite, and in Vedic culture, people are not so much overwhelmed by materialistic romance. They understood the practicality of having a nice family life. And they actually had affection for each other. It's not that when we take away illusion, the romantic illusion, that we lose affection for each other. Actually, then people actually gain affection, real affection for each other. It's when they become overwhelmed by infatuation that they actually lose respect for each other, because they actually become simply selfishly interested and they're only for their sense gratification. And once the duty takes over, once they understand what the purpose of life is, then real affection begins when one can actually see at least that everyone has the same self-interest, namely to become Krishna conscious. I remember when I grew up in Brooklyn, which nowadays doesn't exactly look like when I grew up. There was actually a few miles from where I lived, there was a farm. There were farms. Nowadays, I think the people growing in Brooklyn, they don't even know what a cow looks like. If they saw it, they'd think it was some kind of something from prehistoric times or something. In any case, where I grew up, I never knew anyone who had a father or mother who were divorced. It was unheard of. There are rumors that somewhere in Brooklyn, the parents were divorced. And people were not necessarily very religious either. But it just was, the culture was such that people just understood when they got married, marriage was for life. And I remember when I was distributing books to the airport in Chicago, 10, 15 years later, and I'd meet ladies coming by with children, and I'd ask them, you know, what does your husband do? And she goes, well, I don't have a husband. Practically, very rarely you'd find couples together, but it wasn't unusual to find women without any husbands. And it's progressed even beyond that. Now you can meet women walking with women, and this is my husband. Or men with men. All kinds of things have popped up. I remember I was going just recently, maybe 5 years ago, I was flying somewhere, and there's a whole group of old people, you know, all together. They must have at least been in their 80s or 90s. And they were all, you know, they were all not friends. They were boyfriends and girlfriends. They were just getting their taste of romance at 80 and 90. And it was quite an odd thing to see. When Prabhupada was in Boston in 1968, there was one lady coming to the temple, older lady, I mean older for us at that time. She was in her 40s, and Prabhupada was in his 70s, and she was trying to flirt with Prabhupada. And the devotees were quite surprised. Prabhupada's remark was, you know, because Prabhupada was, just flatter her and she'll... Prabhupada was quite kind with her. Of course, Prabhupada was quite detached also. But Prabhupada said, just flatter her and she'll help out the temple. That was at the time when we got very little help from anyone outside the immediate devotees. The point is that illusion is very strong. taking away illusion is not, is to our advantage. To actually, for instance, a lot of times we hear the philosophy that if you strip away the skin on our body, that it's not very attractive inside. It's not generally what the householders talk about, but it's something practical to understand so that one doesn't become infatuated with the material energy. And when we understand the necessity, what householder life is meant for, then the idea of duty kicks in, that householder life is a way of maintaining the society together so that people live happily and healthily in the proper, not only physically, but mentally and intellectually, sociologically. They live in a very happy, peaceful state of mind. And that way they can actually think about liberation from material existence. To most people nowadays, because they've denied liberation, they think that society is meant simply for sense gratification. And that will make people happy. But anyone who has any experience in society can see how disturbed people are and how distraught they are and how they don't have a clue what actually they're supposed to be doing. Therefore, here in this particular verse, we strip it away. A Bharat Maharaj has really fallen into illusion, falling in love with a deer. I mean, what is a deer? It's a spiritual soul inside this abominable body in the mode of ignorance due to the fact that the soul performed so many sinful activities his last lifetime or previous lifetimes, it became a deer. And he's thinking he's a prince now and kissing it and falling in love with it and petting it. Whatever else, a deer in the forest. He was practically God-realized, and now he's fallen to the state. And therefore we can see that how the living entity, even in the most elevated state of Krishna consciousness, by just a little bit of an idea, a little curiosity, what it would be like to be without Krishna, falls into material existence, and therefore begins to struggle to maintain his body or other bodies. Bharat Maharaj, we go and we talk to people on the street and tell them the difference between the body and the soul, even sometimes they can understand it to some extent. But Bharat Maharaj, who is on the platform beyond liberation, now is worried about a deer, whether the deer is going to survive. Therefore, daivyesha gunamayi mama maya diratya mameva ye prapadyante mayame tam tarantite. This divine energy of mine consisting of the three modes is difficult to overcome, but those who take shelter in me can easily cross beyond it. So this should produce a feeling of dependence upon Krishna. The whole pastime is meant to increase our feeling of dependence on Krishna, that if we deviate even a little bit, insignificantly, it may lead to big trouble. That we can't be so sure that I'm going to coast my way back to Godhead. That I have to take shelter of Krishna very sincerely, and if I do that, then my feeling of dependence upon Krishna will grow as I understand how powerful the illusory energy is, then I'll become more and more dependent upon Krishna. Presently in conditioned life, the souls generally are practically asleep, and in that sleeping condition, they think they're being well cared for. But they don't understand how Arjuna was seeing in the battlefield Kurukshetra, how these great powerful warriors were being chewed up by time and crushing them between his teeth. And that everyone here is being crushed by the material energy, by time. And it's not that others will have to face the problems of material existence, but somehow or another will be immune from them. When Prabhupada was in his final days of his manifested pastimes, his body was quite emaciated, and the devotees were shocked to see his condition. But Prabhupada would often or sometimes remind them, don't think that you're not going to have to experience this, that you're so shocked, how can this have happened to you? but it's going to happen to all of us. Similarly, without understanding things clearly, then we may fall into all kinds of, we are already in illusion, and therefore to understand our illusions and to try to get rid of them can save us from a very unfortunate situation, as Bart Maharaj had to go through. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any comments? Yes, questions?
Is falling in love a form of intoxication?
No, it's a form of madness. As Queen Kundi said, that we're already intoxicated. Anyone who has a material body is intoxicated. Prabhupada would use the example, you take some wine, and then you think you're flying in the sky, or you become a king. So we're intoxicated by our material identification. We think we become this body. How can we not be intoxicated? But when we fall in love, or as Queen Kundi said, when we become anxious to increase our material existence in the form of getting more money or having more material education or more personal beauty or more influence, taking birth in a high country or high society, then we're not only intoxicated, we become crazy, madha. We become mad. Yes.
Does this illusionary energy work from thinking, feeling, and willing?
Let's go. Well, yeah, of course. We think I'm unhappy. That's our first thing. We feel dissatisfied. I'm missing something. And the scripture says we're missing Krishna. But if we don't read the scriptures, then we think we're missing some kind of generally, it's in normal society, it's a man thinks, I need my goddess of fortune. And a woman thinks, I need two-handed Narayan. So then one looks around. Who's available? That's called contemplation. But the first thing is, we feel some lack or dissatisfaction, and we think it's due to the fact that I don't have my material kingdom. And then we try to establish it, and then Maya says, that's the one, that's the goddess of fortune, or that's the two-handed Narayan. He or she will make your life complete. And then lust takes over. We call that love nowadays. I'm really feeling something for you. Yeah, I'm feeling lusty for you. And then after that, if we get some satisfaction, we want more satisfaction. We become greedy. A little glance and we become overwhelmed. Oh, I feel so good. And then we want a little bit more. Maybe I can listen to the voice. Then I can have some intimate talk. Then I can touch, etc. So material nature makes us more and more greedy for sense gratification. And all the time, then we become overwhelmed by illusion that actually I feel happy. My life is becoming better. I'm becoming more complete. And therefore, let's get more absorbed in this. And therefore, it goes on and on, until finally one feels frustrated, that actually I thought I was going to become God, but now I become dog, and becomes angry and frustrated. And that also adds to the illusion. And therefore, one has, in spiritual culture, when one is aligned with one's activities, including household life or any other activity with the Vedic scriptures, then one can avoid this lust and this desire and hate. But when one is not, then along with household life or any other existence comes a whole bunch of desires and hates, fueling the illusion. And then one forgets anything about what one was actually thinking before. And then one loses all one's spiritual intelligence and becomes completely absorbed in material life, attachment and aversion. Yes?
Should it be the same in Krishna consciousness that when we think of Krishna, we should start having feelings and then we can...
Well, we should think about Krishna and we should... Feelings, feelings will, yeah, we should try to be enthusiastic. If we're patiently hearing about Krishna and we gain some confidence that we're doing the right thing, then we can dedicate our energies enthusiastically for that particular service. And then when we dedicate our energies, or as Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Instruction, endeavors executed with intelligence in Krishna consciousness is called enthusiasm. So again, endeavors executed with intelligence in Krishna consciousness is called enthusiasm. So when we actually endeavor with intelligence, according to Guru Sadhana Shastra, in understanding that our business is to please Krishna, then we'll become enthusiastic. So that's the feeling one gets. And then if one becomes enthusiastic, develops Krishna, gives us more and more realization, then we'll become more and more steady in our service, and therefore we'll will to do our service, thinking, feeling, and willing. We'll will to do more service, because we get a higher taste, and we want more of it. Therefore, tatra loya mulam ekalam janma koti sukritarna labhyate. The more we get intelligence, and the more we get become Krishna active with intelligence, the more we become Krishna conscious, then we become greedy to get more and more enthusiasm in Krishna's service. Yes.
You mentioned that material relations like friendship are a form of delusion also coming from past.
Materially speaking, yeah, sure.
Because I wanted to ask, because usually this in material circles also this wish for divine qualities is accepted as the highest standard.
No, without Krishna consciousness, for instance, in modern society, they don't give, well, sometimes they do, but sometimes people don't give credit to whatever vestige of religion is left. But even in societies where there's no culture, people out of self-interest, they form friendships. If you go to South America, there's a history of wars there. And part of the history is that one country was an enemy for another country, but when they had a mutual enemy, they get together and fight against their mutual enemy and they became friends. So friendship meant that we have a common enemy. So temporarily we become friends, and when we defeat the common enemy and we want to divide the spoils up, then we fight with each other. So so-called friendship in the material world is generally, if there's no religious basis to it, no higher understanding of what reality is, it's on the basis of mutual interest. But often we find there's so-called friends, there's always a history, there are good friends, there are bosom friends, no one could separate them, but somehow or another one of them got married and the other friend fell in love with this man's wife, ran away with his wife, and they're not friends anymore. They're bitter enemies. So it's generally based upon mutual selfishness, selfish interest. Without religious principles, then people are on the best on the animal level and often lower than the animals. When the dogs hunt together, we don't think it's because they're good friends. It's because they have a mutual selfish interest. And often they'll fight with each other. Anything else? Jai. Thank you. Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande Hari Bol.